In a cricketing sense, we should hate him, but we came to love him over the years. He very much felt like one of ours in terms of disposition and the way that he played the game. He's got a passion project, which we'll tell you about as well. Kevin Peterson's in the SEN studio. Kevin, welcome.
Thanks for having me. Thank you so much.
When you come back to Melbourne, did you develop a pretty good affinity for the city over the years?
Actually, driving in last night, we landed and you know when you land in a place and you feel happy? I didn't feel as happy in Sydney, but driving into Melbourne last night, I felt, very, very happy. I was like, this is a cool drive. And I'm very happy to be back in Melbourne. I love Melbourne. Like the whole turnaround from the villain to what happened with the Melbourne Stars was something special. And as a human and as a sportsman, it was quite emotional to be able to flip your character from one where you get pelted to one where, I had that standing ovation leaving the MCG last year for my final game with the Stars. So, I appreciate everything.
It's a phenomenal period for cricket. Ashes. Yeah. What's the main event? Is it the World Cup or the Ashes?
That's a very good question. I think from England's perspective, so when Andrew Strauss took over as director of English cricket, they beelined for a white ball coach. So they got Trevor Bayliss, your Aussie, Trevor Bayliss, and they've made great strides in the white ball format. They're ranked number one team in the world, and they are phenomenal, and on their day, no one can beat them. So I think that in terms of the English perspective and the running order, it'll go World Cup, then Ashes. But from the public's perspective and I think the global game, I think Test cricket is still there and thereabouts. And the Ashes is just such a symbolic series. So it's definitely going to capture the imagination. But for cricket, it's 3-4 months of wonderful, wonderful sport.
We'll get your observations on Australia in a moment. But for England... How much is at stake in, or say the World Cup, so the home World Cup with so much emphasis put on it?
Yeah.
Haven't necessarily been a great tournament team at times. Mm-hmm. How much is at stake when we get there?
Mate, there's a huge amount at stake. And I just feel sorry for the players because I saw an interview last week where some of the journalists started talking about this could be as good as 2005. If England win, and I just see them building this team up to absolutely smash them if they lose, and that's the frustrating thing as being an insider and now being an outsider and understanding the dynamics of journalism and how the media works. I just start seeing them right now starting to just build that ladder, take them up there, and if they don't win, I mean, it started now April time where they started saying that it could be as good as the 2005 Ashes and what we did for cricket in England in 2005. So I hope they do well. But by crikey, if they don't, it's going to be a bloodbath.
What have your observations of Australian cricket been over the past 12 months, having known it so intimately, being part of our summers for a while? And
it was sad watching with no crowds. I mean, if India didn't tour here this summer, there would have been no one watching the cricket. And from an insider's perspective, if you could say that, having spent so much time here over the last 3-4 summers, it was sad to see because you know how much Australians love their sport. You know how much they dedicate their time to sport. It's like South Africans. Your outdoor lifestyle and sport is your religion, and it's what you go to school for, and it's what you idolize your heroes. And so from a cricketing perspective here in Australia, it was just really sad to watch the demise of such a great game and such a great sporting culture here in Australia. And the only way to get that back is to win. I think that Australia stand a chance. They've got an outside chance in the World Cup. In England, not so sure in the Ashes, depending on Anderson. Anderson play a big role, and if the batters can get runs, then obviously they will contend. But I think the public in Australia don't deserve to see anything that happens inside that dressing room for a very long time. They need to just get back. Justin Langer needs to run a tight ship, and he needs to make sure that nothing that happens in that dressing room ends up on the front page, middle page, back page of a paper. Because the public just want to see Australian cricket win again, and that's the only way you'll revive the sport.
Do you think it'll be a difficult process for Warner and Smith to go back into the dressing room that you've just described?
I don't think so, because they clearly weren't the only two that knew about what was going on. I mean, it wasn't just the Warner and Smith show. We know that. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist to understand that there were a few more people that were involved in that whole shenanigans. I don't think Cricket Australia handled themselves well over a 3-4 year period at all. And so I think that they copped the brunt of a lot of the stick and a lot of the hiding. So I think you do your time, you do your crime, or you do your crime, you do your time. Just get back into the dressing room. It doesn't need to be a happy dressing room. I played in a dressing room where I couldn't stand a few people. But when you go over the white line, you commit to winning for your country.
So why does that not matter? If you've got a dressing room that's not harmonious, I played football, and if you had a team, because you rely so much on each other on the ground, is it because cricket's more individual in the sense that it's a one-on-one battle on the field?
Yeah. Oh, mate, my battle is against Warne.
Yep.
My battle is against Lee. My battle is against McGrath. My battle wasn't fought by somebody else batting for me. And Warne's battle was against whoever, Tendulkar. Yep. It was that's the makeup in cricket. Collectively, you want to catch every catch. You want to score every run. You want to bowl every ball if that's your role in the team. But it's a team sport made up of individuals. So you don't need to get on. Warner doesn't need to get on with anybody.
Yep.
But if he gets you 300s in the Ashes and Australia win the Ashes, who cares?
It's a fascinating insight, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, we place a lot of emphasis on the team ethos, but yeah, you're
the problem is, mate, throughout my whole saga, it was the drip feeding and the leaking to the newspapers that built a horrible theme around English cricket for a while, and English cricket suffered. And what happened in Australia is it was more brazen. I mean, taking sandpaper out onto the field in Newlands with 30 cameras, I mean, that's not the smartest thing to do. But the internal issues within the Australian side obviously made their way into the media, and then the public see it all. And I just don't like that. It just needs to be kept in-house. And the only way to deal with it now is to win from an Australian perspective, and that's it.
How damaging has it been to Australian cricket's reputation
huge,
around the world?
Yeah. Huge. Massive. Yeah, on a global scale, massive. It was just so dumb.
Are you... Yeah. I mean, it's impossible to argue with
What about the vitriol publicly that if Smith and Warner do play in the Ashes, what can they expect from the crowds?
Oh, in England?
Yeah.
Are they going to get met?
Yeah.
You just need to speak to the guys like Punter and Warney and Langer and stuff whenever they toured England. But hey, some guys are made for it, some guys aren't made for it, and it adds to your career to go and play in England and be the pantomime villain. I mean, I came here and I got absolutely smashed every single time I walked out to bat, and when I got out, when I got runs, like, it didn't matter. Walking down the street and restaurants, I got smashed, particularly in Brisbane. That's why I can't stand the place. But that's just going to be the nature. And when you look back at your career, you go, you know what? I had a pretty cool time.
More with Kevin Peterson after the news headlines.
Harley Heaven, stop dreaming and start riding.
Making SEN news this hour, the federal election campaign is officially underway after the PM confirmed Aussies will be heading to the polls on May 18. The coalition is now in caretaker mode after Scott Morrison visited Governor-General Sir Peter Cosgrove this morning to formally dissolve the 45th sitting of federal parliament. Also today, a judge is finally set to deliver his decision in Oscar-winning actor Jeffrey Rush's high-profile defamation case against a Sydney newspaper and journalist, and European Union leaders have agreed to a request from UK Prime Minister Theresa May for another Brexit extension until the end of October. SEN.com.au Sport next.
Happy Tint. Happy Tint your home, your office, your car. Call 1-800-HAPPY-TINT.
Ruckman Braden Pruce will play his first game for the Demons in tonight's round four opener against the Swans. Midfielder Billy Stretch also comes into Melbourne's side, while Sydney's made two changes as well, with veteran Kieran Jack recalled and Justin McInerney to debut on the wing. And trainer Chris Waller insists Winks will be fine to race this weekend, despite the champion mare getting spooked and kicking a sign after track work at Rose Hill this morning. Weather coming up.
If you're a cabinet maker or kitchen installer, Kitchen Innovations needs you now. Visit kitcheninnovations.com.au. Rain, hail or shine, if you're digging for a living, the conditions are always perfect at Supergroups, Victoria's number one Kubota construction dealer.
Cloudy with a top of 18 on the way today. It'll be sunny and 23 the top tomorrow. A few showers around and 17 on Saturday. Right now, it's 15 degrees.
Thanks, Chris. Jared Waitley, Nick Revolt and Kevin Peterson's in the studio with us. Kevin, you've seen David Warner firsthand in the IPL.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of form is he in?
Amazing. Incredible. I've said this two times already this morning. I was handing him his orange cap as the leading run scorer of the IPL last week in Hyderabad after he scored that 100 and batted so beautifully with Bairstow. And you're not supposed to ask a question to the guy, that you're just supposed to hand the cap over and then go. And I said to the producer, he was coming and said, "You're going live in 5, 4, 3. And I just like, I'm asking him a question. I don't care. And I just said to him, I said, "David, I said, have you ever batted as well as this in your life?" I said, "Because I've never seen you bat like this." And he just said, "I've missed cricket so much. I'm so hungry for runs and I'm just loving batting again." And that said enough for me for the way that he played and the way that he controlled his innings and the way that he played to the situation and the way that he sort of let go of his ego and his bravado when Bairstow was whacking it. He sort of gave Bairstow the strike for a while. And then when Bairstow got out, he started whacking it. And he played the most perfect innings. And his form has just been sensational. And that's all I care about. I couldn't care about what he's like in that setup or what he's like with the Australian side. I like entertainers and goodness... You want him playing for Australia the way he's batting right now.
There's a great national debate around Glenn Maxwell that we have. So I'm an acolyte for Maxwell.
Yeah.
I think he should be in every Australian team that's mm-hmm. played. Whenever we have this debate, people reference you. They can see some of you in him. What do you have a view on Glenn Maxwell and whether Australia underuses him?
Yeah, I love Maxi. I didn't like the way Maxi trained, and I've been very vocal about that. A few seasons ago, I was very vocal about the fact that I just said he didn't train well, he didn't train the right way, and he never gave himself the chance to be consistent. And to play international sport, you need to be consistent. And to be consistent, you've got to practice the way you're going to play. So I was fairly critical of the way that he trained, but he's changed, and he's definitely come out the other end of that. And over the last couple of seasons, in particular in Melbourne, playing with him, working with him, assisting him in trying to become a better player, he has grown from strength to strength. I think the captaincy helped him this year with the Stars. But he still needs to just work on consistency. So one good innings a series doesn't capture the talent that he has and doesn't. I mean, there's a lot of people who will be frustrated with his inconsistency. So he just needs to work on consistency. But also to get consistency, you need consistency in selection. So people need to give Maxi a run. So you're going to play the whole series. So he doesn't just think, "Oh, goodness, I'm going to be in for a game and out for a game, in for a game." Because then you're just trying to play your best innings every time you bat, and that's no good.
Would you give him a run in Test cricket?
100%. Like I'd open with Jason Roy with England.
Right.
Yep, absolutely.
How do you think the Ashes is going to pan out?
It's all dependent on runs. Anderson is obviously a big player in the England setup. So if he plays all five Test matches and he bowls well, then I think England will win. But it all depends on runs. I mean, you never – goodness, the way Warner's playing, if you select Warner and Smith's also hungry, then Australia can get runs. And there are obviously a lot of batters around that to score the runs. But Anderson is – he's so good in England, like so good.
Kevin, everyone who's followed you on social media will understand the way your passion has developed around the increasingly endangered existence of rhinos.
Sure.
And this has gone to the next step now with a National Geographic documentary miniseries, which premieres in a couple of weeks' time. Tell us about the doc.
Absolutely. And it's something that I'm incredibly proud of. We talk cricket and sport for 15 minutes, but I could talk this kind of stuff for hours and hours and hours because it is something that I'm fully immersed in. I've got my own lodge on the banks of the Sabi River in the Kruger Park, so we spend a lot of time, we hop between London and Africa as a family, and we are heavily involved in assisting in the fight against the war to try and have a voice for the voiceless. I mean, the animals are being brutally murdered on a daily basis for something very insignificant and something so silly. Rhino horn is the most expensive commodity on the black market, fetches around $85,000 a kg, more than cocaine, any of the diamonds, golds, platinums. When you see that and you understand it and you also realize that where we are in that general Sabi area of the Kruger National Park is the French Riviera of Africa.
Yep.
But right next to it, there's 3.5 million people where 70% of them are living on the poverty line and uneducated. And so you can sort of understand the dynamics of people wanting to go and find a quick buck out of taking out an animal. But human greed is a quality that I think all people have. It's just what kind of degree of greed do you want to get yourself involved in? And they certainly tackle the emotional side by the syndicates getting involved with naughty guys who go and take out the animals. And it's something that's incredibly close to my heart because the rhino is a symbol of Africa. And it is something where I want my children's children to be able to go to our lodge in 25 years, 30 years time and see the animals like we see them.
Are they beautiful animals?
They're the most gorgeous animals. I think it's such a lovely story, this National Geographic documentary called Saving This Rhino. The first episode is about baby Arthur losing his mum and being taken at a rhino orphanage called Care for Wild. And Petronelle becomes the mum, the umbilical cord for the baby. And she has so many beautiful rhinos. And I mean, I'm so lucky because I just go and hang out with the babies and go and run and carry on. It's like just the most incredible thing. You think about batting at Lord's or walking out at the MCG. You try running around a place, a little baby rhino, it looks like a little dog, and you cuddle it and it comes up and just rolls on you and stuff. It's just the most amazing feeling. And then the second part of the series is about the technology that's been put in place in a private reserve that borders the Kruger National Park. And they've had around about almost 2 years without a carcass. So the technology works, but the technology is expensive.
How critical is this moment in time to...
We are at a very, very critical moment, like incredibly serious moment. If we don't do anything by 2025, there will not be a rhino left, and that ain't going to happen on our clock.
So the doco is Save This Rhino. It premieres Tuesday the 23rd of April at 8:30 p.m. National Geographic. So this is amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. Like, yeah, it's my first play into the documentary world, and we can land a National Geographic documentary. So it's pretty amazing, and it's quite humbling.
Well done to you.
Thank you.
Look forward to seeing it. Kevin, thanks for staying awake to be here.
Pleasure.
Kevin
Pleasure.
Peterson
for having me.
In the studio here at SEN. We'll continue with Nick Riewoldt after the break. This is Waitley for Red Energy, born and bred in Melbourne. That's Red Energy. And always ahead, the new BMW 3 Series has arrived at Doncaster BMW.